Back on Sportsline this morning, Steve Dale of Sportsline, Coach Rodney Allison sitting in the talk studio as well on a Sit and Listen Thursday with Coach and Kelly. And we're going to go back and kind of lay a lot of groundwork as far as Tech history is concerned, let you know where your heritage is and how it was established as you go through Texas Tech football. And we'll do this with basketball. We've been doing it with the other sports as well to a great extent, but we haven't gone this far back that I am aware of, Coach. Have we gone this far back into the early 50s like this with anyone?
I don't think we have.
I don't believe we have either.
But it's something I want to get into with the gentlemen and ladies that are still alive that have a story to tell. And, you know, a lot of this was the beginning. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. Somewhat, you
yeah.
know?
You know, these are the years in the 50s of the old Border Conference that laid the groundwork for Southwest Conference entry, that laid the groundwork for Big 12 Conference affiliation. And here is a man that helped do that in Junior Otterburn. Junior, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're having a great one. Nice rain this morning. A little cloud cover to cool it off. It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful day. You bet.
Well, tell us where you are, what you're doing now.
I'm retired and playing golf three times a week and working out every day.
any holes in one lately, Junior?
Well, I had one not too long ago in a little tournament out at Shadow Hills. And
2011, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. How many in your career?
Four.
Four. Most people are lucky to get one if they get any, and you've had four already. And you said retired. Retired from what? What were you engaged in?
I was the director of graduate admissions at Texas Tech.
We thought that.
Yeah, yeah. I remember you back when I got into school in the early 70s. I think Jack had contacted you about something for my entry into Texas Tech back in the early 70s. That was my first contact with you. I think Jack had known you for many years, needless to say, from your football days out at Texas Tech as well.
Yes, Jack, and I had a real good relationship. We had spent a lot of time together during the old Border Conference days, but I think I may have been in the undergraduate admission office at this time you're talking about.
Yes, you were.
And,
yeah.
So then I spent 5 years there and then 20 years in the graduate admission office.
Well, let's go back to the years of 50-51 when you were out at Texas Tech, and give us your recollection of the season, those 2 years. One of them wasn't quite as good as the other, but the other one was phenomenal as far as the way it ended up, wasn't it?
Yes. In 1951, we had a really good season. We beat it. Texas Tech out here, that was, they were in the Southwest Conference and we were in the Border Conference, so that was quite a victory. And then we got to play in the Sun Bowl in first of 1952. We played College Pacific and was lucky enough to beat them 28-14. It gave Tech's first bowl victory. Tech's been to some bowls, but this was their best first bowl victory. So we were real proud of that.
Now, Junior, detail for us the Border Conference. Many Texas Tech fans know that we were in this league, but don't know much about it, and it probably gets discounted somewhat when you compare it to, you know, the Pac-10 and the Big 8 and so on and so forth. But tell us what the Border Conference was all about.
Well, we played West Texas. We played Hardin-Simmons, Arizona, New Mexico A&M, but then we played a lot of non-conference games with the members of the Southwest Conference.
Yeah, but the Border Conference was not just some sideline conference. It was a full-fledged bowl-affiliated conference, wasn't it?
You bet. You bet.
Yeah, so when you won the league championship, you had actually won something on the par of maybe the Southwest Conference or one of the other leagues around the country. So it was no small-time league by any stretch. And when you guys went January 1 to the Sun Bowl, it was quite an accomplishment, wasn't it?
You bet. You bet. It was a good, bowl game, and College Pacific had a good record and brought them in from California. So we had a good representation. Board of Conference made up of some universities and colleges that didn't have the enrollment like they do now, you know.
True.
We were, so it was a little bit smaller, but it was the first class, AA university athletics, you know, as far as NCAA is concerned.
Now, you were the quarterback of the ball clubs in 50-51. Who were some of your running mates in the backfield and on the line and wide receiver-wise?
Well, Bobby Cavazos was a freshman, but he had really good speed, and he was one of our better backs. Sandy Welton was a fullback, and he gained a lot of yardage. We ran the split T, so we didn't have a whole lot of what you're talking about, wide receivers and flankers and all that.
Right,
know?
Yeah.
So we had some good ends. Lewis Crossley was one, and we had Red Phillips and Gerald Price, two of our better football players on that squad. And we had a really good game at Sun Bowl. I got knocked out early in the game and then came back and finished the game. After the game, they were handing out the little footballs they give everybody, and I faked out and fainted and spent the night in the hospital.
Oh, no.
From what?
You're kidding.
All the other good fellas were over celebrating at Moraes.
but you said you got knocked out. Was this part of the concussion, or was it some other injury?
No, it was just a concussion. They had two big old ends that probably weighed 300 pounds, and their job, we ran that split T, and their job was to tackle me on every play. And I happened to throw a little pass. We didn't pass much, but just I let the ball go. The guy gave me the elbow right across my nose. Nose guards weren't even invented in those days. And, of course, they got a penalty, and the boy got ejected from the game. But didn't help my situation very much, but I only missed about two series of plays, and then I finished the game. But that was quite a memorable time.
Now the 51 team came on the heels of Dale Morgan's ball clubs that were quite successful, and he came on the heels of Pete Cawthon, who was very successful here at Texas Tech. This was the beginning of Texas Tech football really beginning to make a mark for itself throughout the country, and in particular in the state of Texas. How did this junior lay the groundwork for what happened in 1956 as far as Southwest Conference entry was concerned for the Texas Tech athletics?
I believe that's true. I think the people of Lubbock, you know, you hear all these stories about them sending all their credit cards.
Neiman Marcus cards.
Yeah, Neiman Marcus cards, and trying to put pressure on people to invite us into the Southwest Conference. But I came back as a coach in 1956, and in that time from 56 to 60 is when we got into the Southwest Conference. So that was a good time. It was pretty tough in recruiting, as far as we were trying to get our football teams together, to try to still recruiting against the Southwest Conference and being in the Border Conference. But that was all of the groundwork that was laid. You know, we had some fellows like E.J. Hollop come along that we coached and really helped help the situation that we can compete in a conference.
Hey, Junior, let me ask you about a couple guys off that team that really interest me. And, you know, your center that year was a guy named Aubrey Red Phillips.
He was one of the best. Red played, of course, he played offense and defense both, played linebacker. But I always felt pretty comfortable up under him because he's a big guy. And then we had Gerald Price right there, who was quite an athlete, and we ran an awful lot of offense. with them.
Yeah, you made a statement once that y'all never had a miscommunication. What did you mean by that?
Well, he didn't ever snap the ball when I wasn't ready to get it.
Oh, okay. I saw you made that statement. I assume that's what it was.
Well, you know, if you're not careful, sometimes you come out away from that center and the ball goes up straight up in the air.
I've done that a few times.
Yeah. So, and if he snaps it wrong, it kind of hurts your thumb a little bit, too.
Yeah. I've had that happen. Junior, also DeWitt Weaver, give us a little insight into Coach Weaver and, you know, a little bit about him.
Well, Coach Weaver, you know, we all really appreciated what he had done. When he came as coach, I played under Dale Morgan. And then when Morgan left and DeWitt came, it was an altogether different ball game. He brought the offensive and defensive players that he had coached at Tulsa. Jack Mitchell was a quarterback coach, which really helped my situation. And Wade Walker was an outstanding Oklahoma player, and finally he went back, I think, as the athletic director at Oklahoma. And Bobby Goad. When Morgan was coaching, we only had about three coaches. But when Weaver came, well, then you could break up and guys could get the total picture. The practice would slow down when Morgan was coaching because he had to do all the individual coaching himself. And while he's coaching, everybody else standing there watching. Well, when DeWitt came, Jack Mitchell took all the backs and Wade Walker took all the linemen and Golden took the ends. And there was a continuous motion going around. Everybody knew where they were going and no lost time on the field. So I think that was the biggest change that I ever saw in football.
You know, Junior, you talked about playing. You said you coached. You were in the administrative end of the university, both undergraduate and postgraduate as well. Detail what Texas Tech means to you.
Well, it means a lifestyle, an education. That's where I met my wife, and started my it helped me all the way through. When I got through playing at Tech, I went into the Navy. And of course, the coaches related and tried to find the people that I was going into. And I wound up playing football 2 years at Great Lakes. And then, by that coming back, I got an opportunity to go to Chicago Cardinals. And so I've had pretty good success all through. But then, if I had not had the opportunity, the scholarship to come to Tech, I wouldn't have gotten my education and wouldn't have gotten this job and the opportunities to come back and to work at Tech. So it means everything to me.
When you were in school in the early 50s, what did the campus look like?
Well, about half of what it is now. Most of West and Snead Hall and administration building, that the triangle was there, the engineering triangle was there, but all the additional buildings all the way around the campus, it's just been a miracle how that's grown and prospered.
Yeah, there was the administration building, the science and engineering quadrangles, and then two dorms? Is that what there was on campus at that time?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and Holden Hall as well.
Right.
So it was a snapshot back then of what it is now. And enrollment wise, was it even close to 10,000 back then?
I think when I came, it was about 7,000, and I think we were about 13,000 maybe in 52.
What type of legacy do you believe your teams in 50 and 51 left Texas Tech football and athletics in general, Junior?
Well, I think we had a real good situation with our players. They were all, we had a few discontents and a few accidents and those kind of things, but overall, we were a very positive group. And I think by winning that Sun Bowl, that first victory, it really kind of put us on the map.
Well, it certainly is an accomplished season back in 1951. And, Junior Otterburn, we appreciate you being with us here on Sportsline this morning and giving us an insight into our heritage and legacy of Texas Tech football from back as early as the 50s and letting us know kind of what it was like and what this program has been built upon. And we appreciate you taking time out to be with us today. And do you have a round scheduled for this afternoon?
Well, I've already finished my golf this morning.
Okay, all right. So, and you played well, I take it.
Played early, and it's not quite up where you always want it to be better, you know.
That's true. You can always make those little three-footers a little more, couldn't you?
That's true.
Well, Junior, thank you for being with us, and we want to have you back again and talk some more about Texas Tech football history. And thanks for being with us and taking time out for us.
You bet. Enjoyed being with you.
All right, thanks.
See you, Junior.
Junior Otterburn off of the 50-51 team. And you know, go back when you drive to the Broadway entrance of Texas Tech and just imagine you have the two front dormitories on either side of the Broadway entrance. You have the administration building on the south side and Holden Hall on the north side. And then you have the science and engineering quadrangles. And that's it, Coach. That's all there is. There's 19th Street, and beyond that, guess what? It's called dirt. There ain't a lot until you, well, you would have gone to 34th, but you wouldn't have gone much further than that as far as the city of Lubbock is concerned. So this man has seen this thing grow from 7,000 to 35,000, perhaps when the fall enrollment rolls around, and involved intricately in all of it since that time, either playing, coaching, or administrating on Texas Tech's campus.
Yeah, Junior's a perfect example of a guy that we need to listen to and talk about the evolution and the growth of not only athletics at Texas Tech, but the university as a whole. And, you know, guys like Junior, you know, they're not going to be here a bunch more years.
They are priceless.
They are priceless, and we need to cherish and talk and, you know, do everything we can to bring that era to the forefront of Texas Tech.
Indeed.
We do.
Indeed. Well, we've got a gem in the talk studio this morning who's priceless for us. We're going to take a break here on Sportsline. Joe Barnes is in town.
And I always said that, and I've told him this before. I still think, and a lot of people, he was, when I was coming up, he was at Tech and was a quarterback.
Uh-huh.
And I still to this day think Joe was the best quarterback that's ever played at this school. I really believe that.
He'll get a lot
and
of
the
votes.
Greatest year that I think Tech's ever had.
I will agree with you on many points there indeed. We're going to come back and talk to Joe Barnes live in the studio here on a Sit and Listen Thursday on Sportsline in just a moment. Back on Sportsline for a Sit and Listen Thursday. Kelly Robinson will be along shortly, but in the talk studio is Rodney Allison and Joe Barnes. And I don't know if I can keep you two from heaping accolades on each other.
No.
He's the best quarterback. He's the best. I mean, it's a mutual admiration society between, and it should be, because both of you led great Texas Tech football campaigns under outstanding coaches. And Joe, we've had you on before. Tell me a little bit of what you saw in Rodney Allison being the upperclassman when he came in as an underclassman.
Well, I didn't get to see much of Rodney play. He came in the year after I left. He came in 74, and I'd left in May of 74, and he came in. But I remember I went down to Odessa to talk to Rodney and try to persuade him to come to Texas Tech. You remember that, Rodney?
Yeah, I'm trying.
A story or two could come out of this.
Yeah, I kind of remember. I think you did. You come with Coach Evans?
No, I actually driving home for Christmas and
Going to Big Lake.
And Coach Wilson said, "Do you mind going by and seeing Rodney?"
Oh yeah.
And so we talked. We watched some bowl game. It was on TV. Danny White was quarterbacking for Arizona State, and we talked a little bit. Of course, he came to Texas
Tech.
And
the rest has been history. Now
took over number 12 and made it good.
That's true, he did.
Yeah, but I've said this before, and I've always thought this was true. I thought that era of recruiting, especially with Coach Carlin and his ability to close, was as good as it's been in Texas Tech history.
Yeah, I agree. And
that's one thing I wanted to ask Joe, and that was about the passing of Coach Carlin. And what were your thoughts on that, Joe?
Well, I hate to say it. You know, Coach Carlin was he did a lot for Texas Tech. He ruffled some feathers here when he was in Lubbock, but he was a winner. And like I said, he was a great recruiter. What I appreciated about Coach Carlin, and I didn't, appreciate it until I got out of school, was just to see what kind of coach that he really was. After playing numerous years in pro ball and seeing what some of the head coaches I had in pro ball and how unorganized they were, but Carlin was a very organized coach. He was he kind of was a hands off. He let his assistants do all the coaching, which he should have done, and he surrounded himself with great assistants.
Yeah, Carlin came in. Coach Carlin came in, and as you said, ruffled feathers. Feathers needed to be ruffled to a certain extent. I mean, this was a fan base from the '60s that had not had a lot of success. It had rocked along, had a couple of good ball clubs in the '60s with Donnie Anderson and such. And yes, it did beat Texas a couple of times back to back years, but for the most part, it was hungry. And he came in, recruited great, turned you guys loose on the playing field. You won phenomenally. And then, as it was back in that era, there was the dual job description in college athletics, oftentimes of athletic director and head football coach. And J.T. King was getting to the point of retiring, and I think there was that internal battle going on. Carlin wanted both titles and believed he could do both, and Texas Tech didn't necessarily want him having the AD's job, and I think there was money involved in all of it as far as pay scale and raise and so on and so forth. But if we'd left him in place, Joe, where would this program really be today, do you think?
Well, I think, he went to South Carolina and had great success there.
Turned it on its ear.
Yeah, and I think the year after the 73 season, Rodney's class was probably the best recruiting class that Texas Tech had ever had.
I agree.
They had numerous, back then they were called blue chippers, and numerous blue chippers that they got that year. And then they had success, with what they had. But if Carlin had stayed and if he'd have kept, and I'm sure he would have kept his, staff
intact, together,
kept them together, I think, Texas Tech would have been a top 10 team year in and year out.
Yeah. I think we got a little, how shall I say this tactfully, a little full of ourselves perhaps back then and didn't want to necessarily relinquish some control internally, and it probably cost us a great deal in both position and prestige as far as our football was concerned by not giving Coach Carlin some of the things that he desired, because he had proven it on the field. He had proven it recruiting, hadn't he, Rodney, that he could go and get the kids. Because weren't you one of the top two quarterback recruits in the state, and Jimmy Carmichael was the other one as well?
That's correct. Jimmy Carmichael was the number one quarterback recruit that year. I was number two.
How often does that happen, that the two top kids go to the same school?
I don't recall.
Would that be like Vince Young and Reggie McNeil from Texas and A&M going to the same place?
That would have been, yeah.
So, exactly, I mean, right. Look at that recruiting class, Coach Allison. Well, heavens.
I remember, we had Andre Tillman, James Mosley, Kenneth Wallace out of Lubbock, Estee. They were in that recruiting class. Who else made all conference? We had two offensive linemen, Tom Ferguson and Dennis Allen.
Right.
They were both all conference that year. Don Grimes was a kicker.
All conference kicker.
All conference kicker. Yeah. So we, So out of my class, we had probably six or eight of us that made all conference in our senior season.
As you look at Texas Tech's football nowadays, the game has changed, needless to say. I mean, you guys were in some type of run offense before ever pass, and now it tends to be pass before it ever gets to the run side of things in some systems. But look at Texas Tech football in general and tell me, maybe in one word, what your thought would be on the history and where it is now with regards to Tech football, Joe.
Well, I think Texas Tech's made numerous strides. And I think, you know, Tuberville now is getting to the point where he's got his recruits that he has recruited over the last 2 years. And to be anxious to see, just like Carlin did with my class, the way we were when we were seniors, and give Tuberville another year or two, and maybe we'll have another success like they did. But I thought, you know, when Spike Dykes came along, I thought Spike did a good job as far as bringing continuity to Texas Tech, because we had coaches that, you know, came and went there for quite a while.
Yeah, indeed.
And then Spike came on. He stayed for, you know, 10 or 15 years, and I think that gave us some continuity. And he recruited well, had some, you know, two or three Doak Walker winners.
Yeah, that's not too shabby.
Yeah.
And a few All-Americans along the way.
Yeah, you're right. And then Mike Leach comes in and brings an exciting brand of football, you know, to Texas Tech. And hate to see him leave, but, you know, I think Tuberville is I had two stepchildren that went to Auburn and watched Auburn play when Tuberville was there. And, of course, they were undefeated that 1 year.
Yeah.
I thought we had gotten a good hire in Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah.
And I think that he'll prove it here in the next couple of years.
Go back, both of you. I don't care which one goes first. Maybe we start in chronological order here.
Okay.
73. We had the 89 team on a couple of weeks ago documenting how they created their success on the field. What was the internal leadership like on your 73 ball club, Joe?
We had a bunch of guys that played together. We didn't have really any superstars. Andre was our leading receiver, and he caught 20-something passes.
Golly.
Yeah, I think I saw 28 or something.
Yeah, and Lawrence Williams caught about 20. But we had four or five running backs all gained over 500 yards. So, you know, we were a very unselfish team. Our defense was very opportunistic. They got numerous turnovers that year, and we didn't give the ball away that much. And I think we were able to win a lot of ball games because we didn't give the ball, turn it over. You know, of course, when you don't throw very much, you don't have that opportunity.
The only other way to turn it over is to fumble it away.
Yeah.
And if you hold on to it, you don't do that.
That's right. But beat some good teams that year in 73. We went up to Oklahoma State, and they were ranked in the top 20 that
big
year.
Yeah.
We had a big win there.
Yeah.
We went out to Arizona. They were ranked in the top 20. So those are two big road wins that we had that year against top 20 opponents.
Yeah.
And then we get into, of course, that lone loss to Texas was, if we'd have played them later in the year, I think we'd have been a much better ball game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what was impressive to me, though, because the Texas game was the third game of the year that year, I think.
Right.
But they won eight straight after that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
And some big, big wins.
Yeah.
And to me,
the
one
Arizona,
of the great.
Oklahoma State and, the bowl win as well.
A&M and all those. But then to accumulate the whole thing was in one of the bigger bowl wins in our history was that Gator Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, and the great run by James Mosley. Great plays in that game.
But it took cohesiveness with your ball club and strong leadership from the upperclassmen, correct?
Correct. And we had a lot of seniors on that team. We had a couple of the underclassmen in the offensive line, and then Larry Isaac stepped in as a freshman.
Freshman of the year.
Yeah, we had two or three running backs that went out.
Yeah, got hurt.
Yeah, that just George Smith, Rufus Myers, and Larry stepped in about midseason. Couldn't get him out of the lineup. He averaged over 100 yards rushing a game after that.
Yeah, Joe had some hard-nosed guys. I think Garner.
Garner and Mosley. Garner had probably the best hands of any back that I played with. And I'm saying that in the pros also.
Wow. But they had some tough guys. I mean, they had some tough guys now. They really did.
No prima donnas, just hard-working, hard-nosed.
That's exactly what we were. We were blue-collar.
Yeah. Now, let's go to 76, Coach, because that was the next really successful ball club where you guys competed and wound up co-champions of the Southwest Conference that year. What type of internal leadership did you guys have? Was it similar? And the point I'm getting to is that it appears to me that successful ball clubs all have a core group of leaders internally on their team that galvanize it, that bond it together, that bring it together, that keep it in line, and it breeds success.
Yeah, I think you got to have those guys, and I think the 73 team had that as well. But I think the message has to start from the top and go to the locker room. Then you've got to have guys in the locker room that will carry a consistent message from the coaching staff. And the 73 team with Carlin and Bell and Wilson and all those assistant coaches. I mean, then you take the leadership from that team with Joe and those guys. I mean, it's all an accumulation of a philosophy. And I think it with, you know, with Coach Sloan to Parcells to Rex Dockery to our locker room, I think that's where it goes. Then I think as a team, you know, all that works good if you have success. And our team started out with a big win like Joe's team did with a big win over Colorado, which we weren't supposed to win. Then we beat somebody. Then we – and that momentum builds. And your team and the whole chemistry builds from, you know, the top to the locker room. Then you add some success. And I think it's an, just an accumulation. I think that team in 73 had it. I think the team in 76 had it. I think the team in 89 had it. I think the team in 2008. I mean, I just think it's something that that special thing, you know, it's it all comes together from accumulation of a bunch of things.
Do you see anything to 2012 along those lines? Now, Joe may be a little removed from it, but Coach, do you kind of being around it, do you see it, feel it, smell it, touch it? I mean, can
well,
you
I think
sense?
For the first time I do from a coaching staff. I really got a lot of confidence in what Tech has done defensively with their staff, I think. And I'm not being negative towards James Willis or
Glasgow, Chad Glasgow.
But, you know, you got a guy like Art Kaufman, John Lovett, Fred Tate. I mean, you've got some experience in that defensive staff now that I think will make a huge difference. You've got some leadership. You've got a senior quarterback. You've got some guys that have been with Coach Tuberville for a couple of years. I mean, I think a lot of the tools, a lot of the variables that I think you need to have that kind of team are there. Now they've got to take that and take it from the meeting room to the practice field to the game field. Yeah, I mean, it's just the way it works.
Now let me transfer this a little further, then we'll get to a break and get Ron Reeves on. Looking at the Penn State situation, you see a football program now that I think the NCAA is trying to gut. Let's just be frank about it. I think they're trying to destroy Penn State football, to make it an example for the rest of the country, to prove to the other member institutions that we've got control, and by gosh, if you don't abide, then we're going to bring the hammer down on you. But I look at Bill O'Brien, and I look at some of those players that have tweeted back and said, we're here. We're staying. We are angry. We are galvanized. Does that breed success, Joe, for them? Even though they have the scholarship limitations and so on, will that breed success, being able to funnel that type of emotion into their football?
I think it will. And those guys that are standing up saying that cohesiveness that Rodney and I have talked about amongst the team, they're going to watch each other's back, and they're going to give 100% for each other, and they're going to try to make their teammates look as good as they can. And I think that will breed some success for Penn State.
Yeah, I can see that as well. If you're worth your medal as a college football player, then I would think, Joe, that you've got a mat on going into this 12 season and even beyond to prove to all the people outside the parameters of Penn State football that you're not devastated, destroyed, demolished by what the NCAA's tried to do to you. And you're going to hold your head up. You're going to recruit. Yeah, you may lose a few kids. But the kids that come in are the ones that really want to be here, and they will bust their heads trying to make Penn State football what it has been in the past. So, you know, the NCAA, I think, wanted to send a message. And I'm not saying that it backfired, but it may do nothing more except – harden the resolve, Coach, of Penn State football players and coaching staff to go prove the NCAA wrong that they're not going to destroy them.
Yeah, I think that's correct. But if you remember what I said the other day when we first talked about this, I think the most important thing that Penn State's got to deal with, it's not the scholarship limits. They'll deal with it. It's not the $60 million fine. They'll deal with it. I think it's their ability, and it looks like Coach O'Brien's done a pretty nice job, or somebody there directly of keeping those guys engaged, that if they can keep a majority of those guys together, the current team, I think they may be average for a few years, but I think they'll get through this a lot quicker than if you saw a major exodus of these kids and them leaving the program. But I think if they can keep the majority of them there, they'll get through this a lot quicker, and it may be comparable to maybe the USC situation.
Could be. It really could be. So we'll pay attention to Penn State football a little bit as we go through the year, but we're going to turn our attention back to Texas Tech football. We're going to get hold of a hard-nosed quarterback in his own right. We're going to find Ron Reeves here locally and get him on and carry him to the top and even beyond the top of the hour a little bit on Sportsline when we come back. Back on Sportsline for the morning hour, Joe Barnes sitting in the talk studio, Coach Rodney Allison on a sit and listen Thursday. And I'm going to have to ask this guy this question, Coach. Joe Barnes comes from Dallas, right?
Big Leg.
Well, from
Dallas. But you
came from Dallas to Lubbock,
right,
and you're in the talk studio.
Yes.
Well, here's a guy in Lubbock, but he's not in the talk studio this morning.
He's probably still in bed.
Well, that I don't know about, but Ron Reeves is on with us. And, Ron, where are you this morning?
Well, I knew there wasn't going to be physically enough room for me to get in there with those other guys, and so I just safely in my pickup truck working for a living.
No, there is an empty chair that would have been waiting for you had you decided to come by and join us in the talk studio. Well, we know you're here in Lubbock, and we know your fame as a builder, so tell us in detail exactly what you're involved in.
Well, I have a company called Structure Building Partners that we do the majority of commercial construction. We've been doing construction for 25 or 6 years now and enjoying it, and about to learn how to make a little bit of money at it. It's taken me all this time, but I think that's kind of the course of a lot of businesses. It just takes you a little while to figure out what kind of work you need to be doing and how you need to be doing it. But I love being in Lubbock still and getting to be in tune with things going on out at Tech, and really a lot of fun to be sitting here having a conversation with Rodney and Joe, because they're both, as they do know, they're both two of my favorite people, and certainly somebody as a young kid I was able to watch them play and really hope to be somewhere near as good as they were someday.
Well, you had opportunities in football and baseball when you came out of Monterey, and the legacy laid by Joe and Rodney, how did it impact you in deciding to come to Texas Tech?
Well, certainly they inspired me. I mean, I grew up over on 21st Street just across from off of Boston, and heard the band practicing every afternoon and really just dreamed of being one of those guys someday. But honestly, the thing that turned me from baseball to football was my baseball coach at Monterey, Bobby Magel, who obviously knows a thing or two about talent, told me that if I got a chance to play football, I better go play football. So when your baseball coach tells you to go play the other sport, you ought to listen to him.
Well, but you were also recruited by other schools throughout, I think, the conference and country, were you not?
Mostly conference, but I was planning on playing baseball and football at Tech, and I'd narrowed my schools down to ones that were going to let me play both. But as it turned out, there was something every year, that came up in the, well, I wasn't going to get to miss spring training my freshman year, so I was having to go to baseball and then back to football off season. And I did that for about a month during the off season and just decided, man, that's too much. And, I'd gotten to play a lot early as a freshman. And so I really felt like maybe my future was in football. And then the next year I had a separated shoulder I was recovering from. And then the next year we had a coaching change and a new offense, and it just never worked out for me to play baseball while I was at Tech.
Ron, I've gone back through your history, and, you know, it started at Hutchison Middle School, which you're in the Hall of Honor. But one thing I bet a lot of people don't know about you is that you were the city pole vault champion at Hutchison.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I was a 12-foot pole vaulter in the ninth grade, which is still, I think, fairly decent. I don't know. I kind of look in the paper every now and then to see. But I was one of the few guys that could. It wasn't that I ran fast enough, but I was heavy enough to bend the fiberglass pole. Everybody else was vaulting on steel poles. So, you know, kind of throw my fat rear up in the air. And I loved pole vaulting. And I had a really good coach named Archie Souter at Hutchison that he had a tendency. I mean, he always had the city champion pole vaulters because he knew how to coach them up. So, yeah, that's a little known fact. Only you and my mom probably remember that.
Well, Ron, tell us about your introduction to Texas Tech football. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't it an early fall, September, where you came off the bench and led Texas Tech in a comeback victory as a freshman? Am I correct?
Yes, sir. It was the second game of the season. We had opened up with USC out at the Coliseum our opening week, and I was the third string quarterback. Tress Adamy was a fifth year senior who had been misfortunate enough to be playing when Rodney was there and didn't get a whole lot of playing time, but a super guy. Had a chance. He had his chance to, he played against USC. We lost to them in a close game and then had an open week. And, you know, being a freshman third string quarterback, open week was perfect timing for me because they got me a little extra work. And, And then the next week we played Arizona in Lubbock, and Tress went down early in the game with a bad thigh bruise and was out for the game. And second string quarterback was more of a runner and not a very good passer. And we were behind a couple of touchdowns, and they just threw me in one series right before halftime. And we went down and completed a few passes and scored, and I don't know. We may have scored twice before half. Maybe I was in two series. I can't remember. But I know it was one of those nights everything went well. When I went on the field, when they put me in, the Lubbock fans gave me a standing ovation. They started cheering, and I felt really good about that till I found out the next day that since I had number 12 on, they thought it was Rodney coming back.
Well, but, I don't know about that. I mean, I think they were smart enough to figure out that you were Lubbockite Ron Reeves from Monterey High School coming in, and I think they appreciated the local talent getting a shot.
Well, it was a huge blessing to get to do it and get to do it in front of your friends and family. And, you know, I just that year was a special year. We actually started out 1-3 as our record, which wasn't great, but then we won 6 games in a row. And the final game of the year, we were playing in Arkansas. And if we would have beat Arkansas and the University of Houston would have lost their game, we would have actually gone to the Cotton Bowl that year. But we ended up, you know, that was back before they had so many bowls, and they gave those things out, you know, 2 or 3 weeks before the season was over. So if you had a slow start, it was tough for you to get in a bowl game.
Yeah, exactly. Ron, will you hang on with us through the top of the hour break?
You bet.
All right, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and put Ron on hold and get back with him after the top of the hour sports flash. And I want to find out about that Houston ball game back in 1978.